Yeah. be a devotee, that is, one must accept it in a spirit of devotion. One must accept it in a submissive spirit. And now Srila Prabhupada is going to describe another important qualification, and that is that one also needs to have a spirit of inquiry. So let us see what Prabhupada has to say about this. Quote, out of so many human beings who are suffering, there are a few who are actually inquiring about their position, as to what they are, why they are put into this awkward position, and so on. Unless one is awakened to this position of questioning his suffering, unless he realizes that he doesn't want suffering, but rather wants to make a solution to all suffering, then one is not considered to be a perfect human being. Humanity begins when this sort of inquiry is awakened in one's mind. In the Brahma Sutra, this inquiry is called Brahma Jikyasa. Athato Brahma Jikyasa. Every activity of the human being is considered a failure unless he inquires about the nature of the Absolute. Therefore, those who begin to question why they are suffering, or why they came, where they came from, and where they shall go after death, are poor students for understanding Bhagavad Gita. The sincere student should also have a firm respect for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a student was Arjuna. So it means that one must have a healthy uncle, one must have a healthy spirit of inquiry. There are many people who want to inquire, but as Prabhupada will explain in his purports later on, especially in connection with the important verse, Tad Vidhi Paripatena Pariprashnena Srivaya, where Krishna says that one must approach a spiritual master. One must ask questions of him and serve him submissively. He says that one should not have, like, there should not be blind following, and neither should there be absurd inquiries. Blind following is not good. We should be inquisitive. We should want to know the truth. And therefore, there is no harm in asking questions. In fact, it's a good thing. But these inquiries must not be absurd. The inquiries must not be made for the sake of asking questions. The inquiries must not be made with the aim of demonstrating one's skill in argument and logic. They must not be made with the intention of proving the speaker wrong, or with the intentions of proving the scripture wrong. That is not healthy inquiry. So healthy inquiry is that which is done with a firm attitude of respect for, an attitude of firm respect for the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. That's the concluding line in Srila Prabhupada's message here in this paragraph. So along with the spirit of inquiry, there must be a spirit of firm respect for Krishna, and therefore for Krishna's representatives, and for Krishna's message, and everything connected with Krishna. Such healthy inquiry is glorified. It is required in society. Because too much is going on in the name of religion, which is blind following, which is without any philosophy, or which has some absurd philosophy. But the spirit of inquiry into the absolute truth is necessary. Every human being must inquire. Who am I? What is this world? who has created this world? Why is there so much suffering in this world? Generally, nowadays we see that there is so much dazzle of material world outside, the glitter and glamour of the world, and everyone becomes so captivated by this glitter and glamour, they become engrossed in a mood to simply enjoy, being attracted by the temptations of this world. And because of such being so driven by the sense objects, they completely lose their spirit of inquiry. They never even think why they are doing something. If you ask that person why he is living, most likely he will not know. What is the point of living? Why is he living? He will not be able to give a proper answer. For the simple reason that he has never inquired. Or if at all the inquiry has come in his mind, he has not really made it to somebody. He has not really seriously searched for an answer to this question. Today everybody simply wants to just enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. And all inquiries are directed simply towards how to maximize enjoyment and minimize suffering. That's all. How to increase this material pleasure. So this is the life of eating, sleeping, waiting, depending, which means it is animalistic life. Therefore Prabhupada explains here that humanity begins when this sort of inquiry is awakened in one's mind. So if somebody is not inquiring in this way, then that person is not a human being. So the Shastras say, Vipada Pashu, two-legged animal. Such a human being will be doing the activities that seem to be the activities of a human being, but actually he is no better than an animal. So human life is not meant simply for sense gratification. Therefore the Srimad Bhagavatam says, Kamasya Nendriya Priti Labho Jeevita Yavata Jeevasya Tattva Jigyasa Nartho Nischeha Kamukhi. Kamasya Na Indriya Priti Labho Jeevita Yavata. The living entity is not meant to live for the sake of fulfilling desires for sense gratification, out of love for the senses, Indriya Priti. Rather, what is his purpose? Jeevasya Tattva Jigyasa. Jigyasa means inquiry, curiosity. Tattva means truth. So the living entity, especially the human form, the human being, is meant for inquiry into spiritual truth. Na artha. We are not meant to engage our activities for any other purpose. Na artha yast cha iha karmabhihi. Not for any other purpose except for this. So this is a very, very significant statement. And even amongst devotees, there is no harm in inquiring. There is no harm in asking. Rather, if there is any doubt, you should always feel free to ask. As we have heard many times also, that all our scriptures are simply based on questions, on inquiries. Good inquiries actually make the subject matter come alive, make the subject become clear. So good questioning is very much a part of the development of knowledge. It is very much a development of, important in the development of spiritual life. And it's not that one only inquires when one doesn't know. There could be situations when one inquires even though one knows, but one still wants to hear it. Just for the sake of doing the proper thing, just for the sake of everyone else, like Arjuna is doing, is asking for all of us. And also because it is the nature of a devotee to inquire about Krishna and to make progress. So in this regard, there is a nice conversation from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. between Sanatan Goswami and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sanatan Goswami was put in a jail by the king in Nawab Hussain Shah because he was neglecting his duties as a minister. And all day he was just sitting with his pundits and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in his house. And he gave him a false medical certificate saying, I am sick, so I cannot come to service. And the king was suspicious. And one day he sent his own doctors to verify whether Sanatan Goswami was really sick or not. And the doctors found Sanatan Goswami quite healthy and very blissful because he was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. The matter came to the notice of the Nawab, who said that either you should give up all this or I'll put you in jail. But Sanatan Goswami had become determined in his mind to follow Gaurava Mahaprabhu. He did not want to give up the Srimad Bhagavatam at any cost. He was put in jail. Meanwhile, Rupa Goswami, his younger brother, had already left the Nawab service and had gone to join Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he had left behind a large amount of money in case his elder brother Sanatan Goswami ever required it. Sanatan Goswami's name at that time was Sarthak Malik. And Rupa Goswami's name was Dabir Khas. They were born in aristocratic Brahmin families, but because they were associated with Muslims, so they had got Muslim names, and they were considered almost like Muslims. So Sanatan Goswami was in jail, and then he somehow got access to the money that Rupa Goswami had left for him. He bribed the jailkeeper with sweet words and money, and he departed from there. And he traveled a long distance till he came to Varanasi. He came to the house of Chandrasekhar Acharya, where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was present, where he was residing. Chandrasekhar saw someone who looked like a Muslim fakir, or a Muslim wandering mendicant, sitting there, because his beard had grown and was looking dirty because he traveled such a long distance on foot. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him, is there anybody outside? Because Mahaprabhu is omniscient, so he's not there. So Chandrasekhar Acharya said, no, there's nobody. I mean, there's just one darvish, just one Muslim fakir is there. Well, please call him in. So Chandrasekhar Acharya was surprised why Mahaprabhu wants to see this Muslim darvish or this fakir. Anyway, he went to the door and called Sanatan Goswami. Chandrasekhar Acharya did not know this was Sanatan Goswami. And Sanatan Goswami was very happy to hear that Mahaprabhu had called him in. And when Mahaprabhu saw Sanatan, he embraced him because he had seen him earlier in Namkeli some months ago, a year or two before that. And they embraced each other and cried tears of ecstatic love. Chandrasekhar Acharya was astonished. Then Mahaprabhu told Chandrasekhar, please take him and make him gentle and clean. Because Sanatan Goswami had a long beard and long hair and he was dirty. So he said, make him clean shaven and make him nice and bring him back with fresh clothing. So Sanatan Goswami came back looking fresh and effulgent, happy to be in the association of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then Sanatan Goswami started speaking. This conversation is very important for all of us. It is very significant. We must remember that Sanatan Goswami was already a great learned scholar. He was already accepted as a pandit, not only in Sanskrit, in Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures, but also in Persian language, in Arabic, and so on. Even in the material arts and sciences, he was quite accomplished. So in every way, he was a scholarly person. He was not ordinary. Plus, he had an aristocratic birth, very intelligent. So he knew the philosophy very well. But how can kindly present yourself before the personification of Bhagavad Gita. Now we're talking about submissive spirit. How did he approach Mahaprabhu? He actually approached him with straw in his teeth, and then he asked him,
Apna hita hita kichu na jani, vyamya vyavahara pandit pari satya mani.
Apna hita ahita kichu na jani. What is my benefit and what is not? What is detrimental to me? What is beneficial to me? I don't know anything. Vyamya vyavahara, in the ordinary dealings of people, in the ordinary talk of the people of this village, they say, I'm a pandit. And I'm so foolish that I believe that. Now it is a fact that he was a pandit. And the people around him, they were correct in believing that Sanatana Goswami was a pandit. But what is he saying? The people in general call me a pandit and I'm foolish enough to believe that. The Sanatana Goswami says, actually I'm not a pandit. But I simply foolish to believe that I'm a scholar because other people are saying so. How could I be a pandit when I don't even know what is for my benefit and what is not for my benefit?
Kripa kore jodi more koriya shuddhar, apana kripa dekho kartavya amar.
Kripa kore jodi more, if you are merciful to me, please deliver me from this materialistic path. Apana kripa dekho kartavya amar, please tell me out of your causeless mercy, what is my duty in life? And then he asked this very, very famous verse.
Ke ami kere avayan jare tapatroy, iha nahi jani ke mone hita hoy.
Ke ami, who am I? Kere avayan jare tapatroy. Why do these threefold miseries afflict me?
Iha nahi jani.
I don't know this.
Cannot hit a pie.
How can they out and they be benefit for me? How can I be benefited? So the threefold miseries we have first now, Prabhupada has alluded to that before also. Miseries caused by one's body and mind, miseries caused by other living entities, and miseries caused by the actions of the demigods through natural disturbances, extremes and so on. So Sanatana Goswami says, I don't even know who I am and why I am suffering. I know that I am suffering, but why am I suffering? I don't know. I don't even know who I am.
Sadhya sadhana tattva puchite na jani, kripa kori sadhya tattva kohato apani.
Actually, I do not know even how to inquire about the goal of life. So even inquiry is a science. You should know how to inquire. Sanatana Goswami says that I don't even know how to inquire. I don't even know how to ask the proper questions about the goal of life and the process for obtaining it. Sadhan and Satya. Be merciful upon me. Please explain all these truths. So what did Mahaprabhu say?
Prabhu kahe Krishna kripa tomate puna hoy shabda tattva gyana tomana hita patran.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Lord Krishna has bestowed his full mercy upon you so that all these things are known to you. For you the threefold miseries do not exist. And then very important point,
Krishna shakti dharatami jnana tattva bhav Jamita Dhiradi Poche Sadhurasvabhava.
Krishna Shakti Dharatami. You possess Krishna Shakti or Krishna's potency. Jana Tattva Bhava. Therefore you certainly know all these things. However, Jani Dhiradi Poche. However, it is a nature of a sadhu to inquire. Sadhurasvabhava. So because it is the nature of the sadhu to inquire, although he knows these things, the sadhu still inquires dardhya lagi for the sake of strictness. Because that is his svabhava, that is his dharma. So anywhere he inquires, even though he knows the answers to his questions. And then Mahaprabhu goes on to glorify Sanatana Goswami and begins his teaching to Sanatana Goswami. Right from the very basic teaching about the soul, and then going on to many, many abstract understandings of theology about Krishna Tattva, the different kinds of expansions of Krishna, his opulences, his sweetness, and so many things. Very long chapter, very long section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, very, very important section for Sanatana Shishya. So here we see that Sanatana Goswami, although already a self-realized soul, an eternal associate of the Lord, so intelligent and learned, is still asking questions. Because as Mahaprabhu says, sadhana svabhava, it is the nature of a devotee to inquire. Even Vidura in the Srimad Bhagavatam inquires from another self-realized soul, Maitreya Muni. Vidura is also a great devotee of the Lord. It is not that he doesn't know the answers to the questions he has asked, but for the sake of strictness as a sadhu, as a devotee, he is asking all these questions. And what a wonderful section of the Srimad Bhagavatam follows that, the whole of Canto 4, and to some extent Canto 3 as well. So Prabhupada is emphasizing here the spirit of inquiry and also the process of inquiry. Both are very important. So let us continue. Next paragraph. Quote, Lord Krishna descends specifically to re-establish the real purpose of life when man forgets that purpose. Even then, out of many, many human beings who awaken, there may be one who actually enters the spirit of understanding this position, and for him this Bhagavad Gita is spoken. Actually, we are all swallowed by the tigress of nescience, but the Lord is very merciful upon living entities, especially human beings. To this end, he spoke the Bhagavad Gita, making his friend Arjuna his student. So everything has a purpose, including our life. There is nothing that doesn't have a purpose. But there is one very popular school of philosophy, especially among scientists and also others, other philosophers, that there is no purpose in this material world. There was a very famous French scientist, I forget his name, and I think he also won the Nobel Prize in science, physics, Raymond something. And he wrote a book called Chance and Necessity, in which his main thesis is, he was a physicist, he studied physics, and his main point was that everything is happening by chance. That's the crux of his thesis. Nothing is planned. The whole creation, the whole material world has originated by chance. And everything thereafter is just a combination of various chance occurrences. So this has become a very popular theory that appeals to everyone, chance. Why did it happen? Oh, just by chance. Life has come about by chance. The universe has been created by chance. Because no purpose, no creator means chance. And they try to put this philosophy in so many complicated ways, with so much of complex terminology and scientific and mathematical terminology, so everyone gets bewildered. So everyone thinks, yeah, it must be true, because no one can understand really what it means. Nothing is happening by chance. Everything is going on under perfect control of Krishna. Even the common things we say in life are not happening by chance. For example, the everyday example of tossing a coin. When you toss a coin, will it be heads or tails? What do you say? Chance, right? 50-50, 50 heads, 52 tails. That is not chance. If you could study all the forces that are acting on this coin, if you had perfect knowledge of everything that is acting on that coin, then you could determine whether it would be heads or tails. It's only chance because you and I don't have the knowledge and understanding to determine and quantify those things, forces acting on that coin. So we say it's chance. The probability is 50% that the coin will be heads. Probability is 50% means that if I do it 1,000 times, then I will get heads 500 times. That is the whole idea. So it's not that every time, single time you do it, there is a 50-50 chance. No, it's only going to be heads or it's going to be tails. It's not going to be either heads or tails. The coin is not going to stand on the side. It's going to be like one way or the other way. So this is a very popular misconception that everything is happening by chance. And there are many human stories about this also, how we could actually criticize this theory or we could demolish this argument, but then that's another topic altogether. Everything is happening according to the Lord's plan. This material creation is the Lord's perfect plan for the rectification, the purification of all the rebellious souls who do not want to surrender to Him. As the rebellious souls here are under the perfect arrangement where there are perfect laws operating even within this world. And when there are laws, there is no question of chance. The laws are operating perfectly. So when there is law, there is no question of chance. There is a purpose. When there is a law in a country, for any country, there is a purpose behind that law. So also there is a purpose to existence. And most people are so distracted by sense enjoyment that they do not even inquire whether there is a purpose or not. So therefore Prabhupada is explaining here that because all these fashionable theories come up, that there is no purpose to anything. Everything is happening by chance. So Krishna descends at that time to establish the real purpose of life. That life is not meaningless. Life has a purpose. Life is not just a big bang. Life is indeed a very controlled phenomenon. The universe is also a very controlled phenomenon. Everything is being nicely controlled. So Krishna comes to revive that understanding of how everything has a purpose and he makes it clear what that purpose is. So next page 8, first quote. Being an associate of Lord Krishna, Arjuna was above all ignorance. But Arjuna was put into ignorance on the battlefield of Kurukshetra just to question Lord Krishna about the problems of life, so that the Lord could explain them for the benefit of future generations of human beings and chalk out the plan of life. Then man could act accordingly and perfect the mission of human life. Mission of human life. So human life is a mission that has to be accomplished. And Krishna wants all of us, all the human beings in the world, to become aware of this mission. So he speaks through the medium of Arjuna. He has chosen Arjuna as his divine instrument to make available this knowledge to all of us. And then in the next paragraphs, now Prabhupada begins to describe what subjects are covered in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita. having described how to understand Bhagavad Gita, who can understand Bhagavad Gita, why to understand Bhagavad Gita, now he begins to explain what is found in the Bhagavad Gita, what is discussed here, what topics are talked about here. So let us read. Quote, the subject of the Bhagavad Gita entails the comprehension of five basic truths. First of all, the science of God is explained. Then the constitutional position of the living entities, jivas. There is Ishvara, which means the controller. And there are jivas, the living entities, which are controlled. If a living entity says that he is not controlled, but that he is free, then he is insane. The living being is controlled in every respect, at least in his conditioned state. So in the Bhagavad Gita, the subject matter deals with Ishvara, the supreme controller, and the jivas, the controlled living entities. Unquote. So in other words, the jiva is always under the control of the Lord. The Lord is always the controller. He never loses control. You see, there was one argument, one theology in the West. I think some Christian theology or somebody, he was trying to reconcile how there is evil in this world. Many Christian, Jewish and other theologians are unable to come to terms with evil in this world. Why is there evil? They're not able to figure out that God is all kind and all loving. Why should there be cruelty, suffering in this world? We can't understand this point, which even a beginning student, a beginner who is studying Bhagavad Gita can understand according to the laws of karma. So they were talking about, they were trying to accommodate their religious beliefs to the developments of modern science, so that there would be less of a conflict. And when the scientists said more and more strongly that there is evidence that everything began with the Big Bang, so then they said that actually it is God indeed who created the universe. But after God created the universe, then he took a back seat. And he let the universe take care of itself. So he's in control, he's the origin only to the extent that he set the thing in motion and then he withdrew. And then the universe is evolving itself by chance and all these things. So this way they want to reconcile the theory of chance with the theory of creation. So there is a creator who is a God, but still it is chance that operates, because having created the universe, then the Lord just relaxed. He didn't get involved in the activities of the creation. But that is not so. The Lord is in control at every moment. Not Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan. He's too busy playing the flute. He's too busy hunting the cows and doing Rasa Leela with the gopis and giving pleasure to Yashoda Mata and Nanda Maharaj to be involved in the act of creation of the material world. He doesn't personally get involved. But his expansions, the Purusha avatars, the three Vishnus, they do this task of creation on his behalf. They're also not different from Krishna. So at every moment, there is perfect control. The creation never goes out of hand. It's not that God is like a person who's driving a car and sometimes at high speed he loses control of the car and there's an accident. No. God is 100% in control at every moment, or he's in control of every atom. So of all the five basic truths Prabhupada is mentioning two here, one is Ishvara, who is the supreme controller, and Jiva, the living entity who is always controlled. He has free will, of course. So if he has free will, then how can he be controlled? Who would like to answer this question? It's a philosophical point. Very simple answer. If we say that jiva is controlled, then where is the question of having a free will? That means we are all like robots, we're machines. What is the answer? Yes.
How we try to stand and how can we within the circle only? We cannot go outside. So the free will is like that. Within the little free will we can use, how can we can use on our own will. But yes, how we cannot cross the free will. There is limitation is there in that free will.
So that's one answer which is nice, that the freedom the living entity possesses is like that of a bull who is tied with a rope to a pole. So his freedom is restricted to the length of the rope. His free will is exercised to the extent of the length of the rope, which represents his karma. So that is true, but at the same time, the living entity is much more controlled than even that. Further, some other answer. Yes, yes. Ataji, yes.
Jiva is controlled under the illusory energy or somehow. We are not controlled by
the illusory energy. Jiva is controlled under the illusory energy, yes, that is correct, the conditioned soul. But the question is, then where is the question of free will? If you say he's completely controlled, then are we free at all? Do we have any free will? That is the question. Yes.
Jiva has a freedom to choose whether he wants to surrender to the internal energy or external energy. How he wants to be, whether he wants to be free.
Jiva has the freedom to surrender to Krishna or to surrender to the external energy, yes. So please go ahead on that logic. Continue that logic. Yes. Even though the jiva is under control, but he can exercise free will to get out of his bondage, yes. But still the answer is not clear. My question is, to what extent is the jiva free? We say he has free will, but at the same time we say we are controlled. So it seems like a contradiction.
Yes, he can desire, but
yes, yeah, that is the answer I'm looking for. Then Krishna gives us an appropriate kind of association wherein we do the kind of activities that we desire, and then we get the reactions to that, and we are bound in the cycle of birth and death. So therefore we are controlled completely. The jiva is controlled in the spiritual world and also in the material world. The problem in the material world is that the jivas do not submit to the control of the Lord voluntarily, and therefore they are forced to be under the control of the Lord's illusory energy. If you do not directly want to be under Krishna's control, then you will be forced to be under the control of Krishna's illusory energy. Inasmuch as a citizen of a country who is not willing to obey the laws of the state and breaks the laws of the state will be forced to obey the laws of the state by being put in jail, where whatever freedom he has will also be further curtailed, restricted. So in one's efforts to be free and get freedom, we actually end up binding ourselves more and more. Just like a fly who is caught in a spider's web, who struggles and struggles and struggles, and more the fly struggles, the more it gets bound to the web of the spider. Nowadays, it is a modern disease that everyone wants freedom. No one wants to listen to authority. Everyone wants to do whatever they like. The youngsters don't want to listen to their parents or the elders. The citizens don't want to listen to the government. The government doesn't want to listen to the voice of the citizens. Nobody is listening to anybody. Only everybody is listening to the voice of their own minds. So therefore you have so many minds just talking, each one wanting to control, but each one being actually fully controlled by Maya. So in the name of wanting mindless freedom, we are actually inviting free doom. Doom. You know what is doom? Doom means destruction. And it's coming for free. Free doom. In the name of freedom, we are asking for free doom. Doomsday. When death comes, then we are forced to again take another birth. Real freedom comes in giving up our freedom. This may sound very strange, but it's a fact. Real freedom means to surrender to Krishna and give up one's independent desires to lord it over this material nature. Then we get Krishna's protection, and then we transfer to the spiritual world, where we will have so much freedom to interact with Krishna, although we are also controlled even there. But there the privilege will be that Krishna is controlled by the love of the devotee. So it's a competition of mutual control. The Lord controlling the devotee and the devotee controlling the Lord. This is what is happening in the spiritual world. But for the conditioned soul, always controlled by illusory energy. In the spiritual world, the pure souls are controlled by the pure spiritual energy of the Lord. And therefore they even forget, like in Vrindavan for example, Krishna's supreme position. Mother Yashoda doesn't know about Krishna's supremacy because the Leela Shakti, the Yoga Maya potency of the Lord, governs her understanding of this fact so that she can love Krishna very purely as a mother. So the conditioned soul, however, is controlled by the illusory energy. So we'll discuss more tomorrow about the other three topics. Prabhupada said here there are five topics in the Bhagavad Gita, of which he has mentioned the first two. Ishwar, that is the Supreme Lord, who is the Supreme Controller. And second is the Jiva, the living entity, who is conditioned here in this material world and is under the influence of the illusory energy of the Lord. So we'll stop there. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
desires, we desire. In one sense, we are Krishna's eternal parts and parcels, my new. So quality-wise, we are same as of in qualities, we are same as Krishna's. But we are conditioned. But still, we can we in, as we are same in quality as of Krishna. So Krishna desires, but still we are desiring. But desires are for material benefit. Materially, we are desiring. So the desire is there because of in quality wise we are same. So, is it not?
The question is: why is it that the jiva has desire? Is it because the jiva is a part and parcel of Krishna, one in quality to Krishna? And because Krishna has desires, the jiva also has desire. Yes, that is correct. Why do we want to fight?
Krishna.
With others? Because it is there in Krishna. Why do we want to do anything? Because all these desires are fundamentally there in the Godhead, in complete imperfection. So being part and parcel of Krishna, naturally, we have the same qualities, but in very, very minute quantity. So Krishna has desire, so being his part and parcel, the living entities also have desire. It's only a question of purifying the desire. At this moment, the conditioned soul's desires are impure, and all the conditioned soul has to do is to purify that desire in the association of your souls. Any other question or comment? Yes. Krishna came as a peace messenger on behalf of the Pandavas to the court of Dhritarashtra, and Duryodhana ordered his soldiers to capture Krishna. Then Krishna displayed a portion of his universal form. So how did Duryodhana respond to that? And why is it that he did not become a devotee after seeing that? The answer is because he did not have the qualifications mentioned here. Krishna never says here that you can only understand the Bhagavad Gita if you see him, or you can become a devotee if you see him. He doesn't say that. He doesn't say that the qualification for becoming a devotee is that you should see Krishna. No. Rather, by becoming a devotee of Krishna, you can certainly see Krishna one day. But simply by seeing Krishna, it is not necessary that you will become a devotee. And Duryodhana is the best example of that. Duryodhana saw Krishna, but he did not have a spirit of devotion. He did not have a submissive spirit. And therefore, even though the Lord was personally present in front of him, he challenged him and he did not accept his supremacy because he lacked the submissive spirit that is required for an understanding of God. There were many asuras in Krishna's time who were in the physical presence of Krishna, but because they lacked this devotional and submissive spirit, so they could not understand Krishna as he is. Whereas we may not be able to physically see Krishna in the sense that the Duryodhana saw Krishna, but if we see the deity of the Lord and we also hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita and so on, then we can see Krishna with our ears, and eventually we will be able to see Krishna with our eyes. So it is more important to see Krishna with our ears. We hear about Krishna, and then we will be entitled to go back to the spiritual world to always see Krishna face to face for the rest of eternity. Any other question or comment? Yes.
The freedom of desires is, I bondage of my desire. So when sense attraction is here, is there, then my desire is with senses. So what is true for us? How I can be free of my desires?
Yes, that's a very good question. The question is, it was mentioned that there is the only thing that Jiva has freedom in is the freedom to desire. That's all. But the question is that even the freedom to desire is not perfect because it is influenced by one's conditioning. For example, when the senses become very strong to demand some form of pleasure in this world, then one's desires automatically flow in that direction, helplessly. That is absolutely right. So even our desire is not, we are not truly free in even our desire, in our freedom to desire. Because that desire is also influenced by the association we have. If we are associating with devotees, we will eventually develop the kind of desires that devotees have. If we develop association of non-devotees, then we will culture those desires that they have, and eventually that will become the predominant influence in our life. So that's absolutely correct. We are not free even in desiring to some extent, because that is being influenced by our association. Association brings forth actions. We do like that. We act according to the kind of people we are associated with. Then that becomes a habit. We repeatedly do that, and then we can't come out of it. So what is the solution? The solution is to associate with those who have the proper desire. That's the only way. So if we associate with devotees who only desire Krishna, then we will also one day come to that position where we only desire Krishna. So that is the key. The principle of association is very, very powerful. Therefore, the talks between Ramananda Rai and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after going through many arguments with Ramananda Rai, came to the point of association of devotees in which we hear a chant about Krishna constantly in a submissive mode of service. Then Mahaprabhu said yes. And Prabhupada says that is the basic principle of perfection. So the association of devotees and the yearning and chanting process and the servant process is the only way we can change even our desires. And mold them towards Krishna, to convert our impure desires into pure desires. Alright, thank you very much. So we'll stop here. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.